Welcome to the West Ham Way USA podcast. I'm your co-host Tony in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. On the other side, we have Brawley in St. Louis. What's going on? Welcome back, Brawley.
Yeah, it's only been, a couple of weeks since we recorded, but we're trying to get back to more, on-time recordings, as we should say. We're going to try to get back to once a week. Definitely when the season gets going, we'll be back to once a week. But I think the listeners hear this from us all the time, and then we always kind of get delayed, so apologies for that.
I was a bit annoyed because I saw there was some sort of website. I don't think it was actual rankings. I think it's some sort of like algorithm. But there was a whole list of West Ham podcasts, and it was funny. Ours, it talked about the frequency, and it was like once or twice a month. I'm like, okay, we need to change that. We need to get back to
for sure
hanging out on the weekends and doing a podcast together.
Now that I'm back to, or I'm working a new job that I wasn't working last season, I should be able to be available on the weekends and actually get to watch the game. So we don't really have any excuses to get back to full-time regular pods.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things that was tough last year was I was still working at the restaurant and you were working at your spot. So, I mean, there were times that we both missed games and it was just hard to talk about and just life is busy. But here we go. We're hopefully back on a regular schedule, praying to God that that's how it works out for us.
For sure, yeah. And since we've last recorded, we have played three preseason friendlies, I believe.
Yep, well, two at the same time and then the one against
the Brentford.
Yep.
So the Ipswich game, I did not get to watch. I watched the entire Wickham match because the Wickham match was free to stream. I don't know why on earth Ipswich would be charging £10. I mean, I know why, to make money. But you would think for a game that fans aren't allowed to attend, you'd make it free to watch. But I guess maybe because the fans aren't going in the gate, that Ipswich feel the need to charge $10 per person to watch the game, or £10, excuse me. But yeah, I watched the Wickham game. Did you get to see either game?
I saw a bit of the Wickham game. I would, if I was an Ipswich fan, and like, I don't know their club financials that well, but if I was a fan of a smaller team and knew like the money was important, I would pay £10 to quote unquote donate and support my team. I feel like that'd be more like for like a League Two or maybe a non-league side, maybe not Ipswich, who's still, in my opinion, a fairly large size club.
Yeah, for sure. Side.
But you know, if my team needed £10, I would donate £10. But not to West Ham. Fuck them. So, fuck the board, I should say. And yeah, so I watched a bit of it, but not enough to have a full commentary. What were your main takeaways from the Wickham game? I watched more of the Brentford one. I can weigh in better there.
Yeah, so like I said, I didn't watch any of the Ipswich game, so I can only go off of what I've heard. But from the Wickham game, I thought Jared Bowen was really, really, really good. I love the way that he seems to be coming into his first full season for West Ham. I think he's absolutely going to be a key player for us this season. I firmly believe that. And other than that, I think a good, strong team performance. A little sloppy at the back. Our wing backs, our outside backs, are atrocious. They are the absolute focal point for any team when they come to play West Ham. It's get down the left or get down the right, and you know you're going to have a chance, especially the left side. If it's Cresswell or Masuaku, I'm attacking that side almost every single time. Fredericks, I don't know what it is about him. The more I watch him, the more frustrated I get. I just think he has the potential to be really, really good, and his pace is electric, but his defending and crossing is not very good.
That's what I was going to say. That's his saving grace. He reminds me of any of MLS fans watching. I'm a Philadelphia Union fan. There's a guy named Ray Gattis on our team. And really, the only thing he brings to the table is pace. He's not a good offensive player. He's not a good defensively either. But his saving grace is that he can recover well after he makes a mistake. And I think that's Ryan Fredericks' piece of the game, is he makes a lot of mistakes. He's just very good at recovering.
He reminds me a lot of Adama Traore before he turned into the Adama Traore that we've seen. The Traore that just left Barcelona and I believe went to, I don't know if he went straight to Forest or where he went, but he reminds me a lot of him. He's scrawny, doesn't really attack all that well. He can. He has times of brilliance, and I know they play different positions, but that's what Fredericks reminds me of, and I'm just hoping that there's time for him to build himself into a decent Premier League player. I'm just starting to doubt that more and more. The more sample size he gives me, I'm starting to doubt him more and more, but hopefully he can prove me wrong.
Yeah, I want to take it back to what you said about Jaron Bowen, though. As a key performer in that match, I'm extremely excited for him to have a full preseason. And when I say full preseason, I mean like the 3 weeks. But just actually starting the season with the squad, getting properly integrated at the end of the year, and what he can bring to the table this year. I think he's going to be a key performer, and I guess I'm trying to be positive, and I'm not trying to be like the board feeder here, but I'm trying to give myself motivation to get excited. Does that make sense? Because I don't expect any key signings to come our way. So I'm in my mind, just so I'm not angry, even though we all should be angry, I'm going to try and treat Jared Bowen like a new signing, even though he was January last year.
For sure, yeah. And I do think the addition of Grady Diangana is essentially a new signing as well. And I think the board are going to hang their hat on that, he is a new signing, so we don't really need to do anything else. I don't know. I'm not getting my hopes up at all for any transfers to come in. And if we sell Declan Rice and we don't bring anyone in, I think there's going to be riots. I just really hope that doesn't happen. But to get back to the Wickham game, I thought Lanzini had his best performance in a very, 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 very long time. I can't remember the last time he looked as lively as he did. Now, I don't know if that's because it's against championship, quote unquote, that Wickham are in the championship, but I think they were not expected to go up this season, especially because they were one of, I believe, two or three teams that voted to null and void the season out for League One, and they lost, and they got all the way to the championship, the playoff final, and went up via the playoff final. So I think they're essentially a League One team. And I don't know if that's going to be Lanzini's hub or if he is going to be back to a full-time Premier League player like we saw before his ACL injury, which, and again, I can't blame the guy for not being as good as he was after tearing an ACL. I mean, I don't know what that's like. I know the ACL injuries are really tough to come back from. It's happening more and more and NFL players and footballers, soccer players, and I can't blame him or be mad at him for not being the same player as he was before, but hopefully this is a sign of him getting back into a groove for us and become a key performer again, because like I said, I'd be okay with selling him. Like if someone saw that performance, like a foreign team or another Premier League team, they saw that and they offered me 10 to 15 million pounds for him, I'd let him go. But hopefully he'll be a good performer for us this season.
We need a lot of those guys who were injured or poor last year really, really, really to step things up and change the game, considering we are going to have lack of investment. We need the Felipe Andersons to, quote-quote, be a new signing. We need Wilshere not to get injured and, quote-quote, be a new signing. Fabianski to make it a full season and be a new signing. I mean, think about how different our season could have been. And I believe I said this on the last pod, but think about that game when we were 1-0 up to Palace on the live table sitting third. Maybe, I know it was still early, but it had to be maybe six or seven games in. I mean, we were on a roll. After getting smacked around by City in the first game, we played fairly well, and I was at the 1-1 draw to Brighton. But, I mean, we were still getting some results in a row. And then the injury and just that result just buckled our entire season. I think a lot of these players, that if they would just step up, I think we have a solid team on paper. And I don't know if I'm drinking the Kool-Aid because I'm just excited for the season to start or what, but we really, really got to make something happen this season.
For sure. I mean, that's Dave Walker from the West Ham Way. That his thing is he always says is we're on paper, we're a top eight team. And I would agree with that. Unfortunately, the game's not played on paper. And our team chemistry, for whatever reason, just doesn't seem to work. And then the manager's tactics always seem questionable. So I fully agree with you. I mean, our squad on paper isn't terrible. I do think, again, that the left back and the right back situation is going to be a massive, massive problem for us this season. And if we don't get another striker, and I'm worried about what's going to happen to us, because I hope Sebastian Allaire becomes the player we all think he can. He scored a hat trick in the Ipswich game, which is awesome. Great to see. By the way, we won. If you somehow missed it, we beat Wickham 5-1 and we beat Ipswich 4-1 on the same day. So on aggregate, a 9-2 result for West Ham. That's pretty good.
Is that how that works?
Yeah, I'm gonna count it that way. But you know, the board are crying poverty right now, and it sucks. The COVID thing that is what they're blaming everything on. You know, but you look around and you see all these other clubs. I mean, and I'm sure it did. I'm sure financially it impacts them a lot. But if you don't have the funds to cover your butt during a pandemic, you shouldn't be owning a football club. Period. I mean, if you're truly that broke, you should not be owning a football club. So, you see other clubs spending money. I mean, you look down the Premier League; other teams are buying players for significant fees. So, we cannot be the only ones to not make any signings. I think it's going to cost us in a relegation battle for next season. But I mean, we'll see how it goes. But you see Crystal Palace splashing some cash on Eze. I know they had who did they sell for a lot of money?
Wan-Bissaka?
No. Yeah. Wan-Bissaka. Yeah, and I don't believe they spent hardly any of that money. So maybe they had some cash to splash, but if Crystal Palace are spending money and Aston Villa are spending money and West Ham United are not, that's a problem.
I'm just getting sick of maybe I'm in my own head or have too high expectations, but I'm getting sick of getting beaten out on transfers to other mid-table or even second division or lower Premier League sides. I mean, it's getting embarrassing now. I mean, in my head, and I could be biased, but in my head, I see us as a bigger club than Crystal Palace.
Oh, for sure.
And I really think, and they always seem to be, for a while, they were our transfer rivals or whatever the fuck we want to call it, but we really should be competing with the likes of Everton and Wolves in my head. There's the top six, and then there's a second tier right there, like Everton, Leicester, Wolves. And I know Leicester won the Premier League, and I know they have a great scouting system and recruitment, but in my head there's this little second pack of four or five teams that should be 11th to 6th or 7th, and I really think that that's where we should be. We should not be missing out players to the likes of Palace and Bournemouth and Villa. I mean it's sad. It's sad, and it's disappointing.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree anymore. It's, you know, year after year after year, you see all of these transfer links, and it's the same clubs popping up who are rivaling us. And it's usually like Everton and Crystal Palace and Newcastle and those clubs. And it seems like those clubs are beating us to these signings. And it makes you wonder. And it also makes you wonder if those clubs that are negotiating with our board, if our owners are just frustrating them to the point where they don't want to deal with them anymore. And you're hearing that more and more.
I wouldn't.
Why would you?
I mean, in my head, I mean, I'm looking at the table right here. You know, I think we should be above in status, prestige, and where we should be competing. In my personal opinion, above West Brom, above Southampton, above Sheffield, above Newcastle. You know, above Leeds. Leeds is a massive club, though, but they're still getting back. Above Fulham, above Burnley, above Palace, above Villa, above Brighton. You know, I really think that we should be and competing in that 10-7 range. Instead, we're just scraping the bottom the last 3 years now.
Yeah, and it really seems like our owners have become more ambivalent to challenging for Europe and totally focused on just staying in the Premier League. I mean,
their bottom line. What was that quote that X put out today? Sorry to interrupt you. What was that quote that X put out today about the owners trying to stay in the Premier League for the bare minimum?
I don't know if I saw that.
Okay, well, he put out something. I don't feel like looking at the exact phrase, but the point of the story is they finally have just admitted to what what we've been saying, is they're trying to do everything on the cheap and maximize profits, which, you know, they're businessmen. However, that, and I said in the group chat this week, I don't understand how they're businessmen. They literally lose out on any player. When was the last time we turned a profit on a player? Who?
Dmitry Payet would probably be, and I think a small
fraction on Arnautovic.
Small profit on Arnie, but no massive ones, really, ownership.
None. And I'm not even talking about a youth player. I'm talking about on a transfer in, transfer out. We have not made a significant amount of money.
Ashley Fletcher would be the only one that you could even consider. I think we got him for like 500 grand or something, and we sold him to Middlesbrough for like 7, which we couldn't believe that we got. So, I mean, that he's the only one that I can think of.
Either way, these people are not businessmen. I mean, they've did zero investment on outside backs that we know has been an issue. I believe the figure, I'm just talking out of my ass, but I swear it can't be more than £15 million since 2012 or something like that on outside backs. I can't think of anyone. Think about strikers. We've spent over 100,000+ pounds on strikers, and look, today we only have one, Allaire.
Yeah.
So I mean that's literally where our investment is, and it's just horrible. They are terrible businessmen, and it's a shame to even call them that. And then the fucking idiot Brady, she ain't a businesswoman either. So I don't know what any of them are doing, and it's just a shame what they're doing to our club.
Yeah, and.
We went from preseason friendly right into this rabbit hole.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's where every conversation that a West Ham fan has, it leads back to the owners on every single one of them.
As it should, because they're the epitome of the lack of investment, the terrible facilities. I mean, they are the bozos in chief.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeesh. Okay, the Brentford friendly.
Yeah, so that was on Saturday at 8 a.m. my time, I believe 9 a.m. Eastern.
Yep.
And probably my two favorite teams in world football, besides St. Louis FC. But Brentford are always that team that I've had that soft spot for, so it was nice to see them play against each other. Was hoping it was going to be in the Premier League this season and not in a friendly, but Brentford lost the playoff final to Fulham, and so they spent another season in the Championship. But it was nice to see. Actually, let's talk about, before we get into the game, the seats, now that you've seen them, have been squared off.
Oh, yes. On the
And so we got to see that for the first time in action. We didn't get to see it with fans in it, but, I mean, what are your opinions on the new seats that have been installed? Does it improve anything?
I have a lot of opinions about the new seats. I had to ring up the club because they fucked me over.
You and a lot of other people.
Just like everybody else, they moved my seats all over the place. And I'm not with my group of friends. They moved me. Everybody got moved to the right. I got moved to the left. They moved backwards. I moved forwards. I mean, I ended up getting a quote-unquote better seat, but I obviously don't go for the fucking football. So
yeah.
I go to hang out with my friends. So they've really, really did me dirty there. I know a lot of people don't like the new seats. I think it looks nice, but I don't think that it's really any further or closer.
Mm-hmm.
I think it looks better, but it was never about the fans. I saw something interesting the other day that apparently it'll save the stadium operators X amount of millions of dollars whenever they move it. So did they actually do this for the fans, or they do this to
Sorry. What did you say there? It's going to cost the people who move the seats less money to have it squared off. Is that what you said?
Yes. So they paid the initial investment to have it squared off, but the actual moving of the seats, I believe I read, and again, I hope someone can fact check me, one of our listeners. I do believe it'll actually save the stadium operators money on the actual moving cost of the stands.
Interesting. Do you know why that is? Just out of curiosity?
No, I don't have an architectural degree. No, I have no idea.
I guess maybe because it's even, and maybe they can – I don't know if there were – So are these still scaffolding, or is there any retraction at all to this?
I believe they're still scaffolding. My guess, again, not actually knowing, my guess is that they're probably either A, easier to take apart, or B, easier to split up and move around. I genuinely have no idea.
I didn't know at all. I didn't know any of that, so I learned a little bit there. I was just wondering if you knew the details.
Yeah, but anyway, I mean, I think it looks nice, but I think it's a Band-Aid on a bullet hole, you know.
Agreed.
I've said before that I don't mind this stadium, but I come from an American culture of big stadiums not being close to the field. So my opinion's biased. I did not grow up in England. I did not support West Ham for the last 50 years and grow up in the Chicken Run or in the Bobby Moore Lower and all that. You know, I did not. So I'm not going to act like I did. I come from watching games at the Vet. You remember the Vet in Philadelphia or Three River Stadium in Pittsburgh? They're just massive, massive stadiums where you're not even close to the field. So for me, the London Stadium is no different than an American stadium. But for a lifelong West Ham supporter, I completely understand and agree with every gripe that they may have.
Yeah, no, I basically agree with everything you're saying. I think, you know, it's amazing to me that the club botches every single
everything.
Thing that they can do, like
the ticket renewal was a mess. Was it
like
with COVID, all that?
The simplest things to them, they manage to screw it up on multiple levels. Moving, you move stadiums into the new ground, and you had to go through this whole process of getting your seats where you wanted them with the people that you wanted.
Yep.
Now you square off the stands, which in theory is a good thing, but you can't even like coordinate with the people holding the tickets to move them in the same groups that you were before. Like, it blows my mind.
Here's what I don't understand. And this is why I said that why the fuck don't I listen to the fans? I have no idea. You spent all that time, you said it perfectly, for people to pick their seats in the London Stadium and get with their groups and do all that, right?
Yeah.
No one's returning back to the stadium for the next how many weeks anyway? And even when they do, it's not going to be your official seats because it's going to be a limited capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So why the hell did they not take this time to say, okay, everybody,
here's the plan.
Here's the plan, and let's repick your seats and move everyone where they need to move. Hey, and then you get with your group. You say, hey, I want to be in this group, or gives people the opportunity to get with another group. You have a whole season. I mean, if they're not going to have fans back until January or I don't know when they'll even ever have a full stadium again. But it could just easily be remedied by taking the time to do something right. Instead, they use some shitty algorithm computer program where it's like, boop, boppity boo, here's your new seat, bitch.
Yeah, no communication.
Like,
this is where you're going. I totally understand. I'm sure their reasoning is that there's no clear and obvious answer to this. Some people are going to get screwed no matter what. But at least take the time to think it through. It just seems like nothing that they do is thought through, and everything's rushed, and they always manage to screw it up. And it's just, I don't know why they can't take a little responsibility and just say, okay, we're not going to be as much of a joke anymore. Let's just do something right and do it the right way. And not, I don't know. It amazes me how many little things they get wrong. Just like putting out a season ticket renewal. There was something on the same day that happened, and they're putting out ticket renewal time is here. And then they make you pay for it in full. And there's no, like, what were the options they gave you guys?
So here's where I was annoyed as well. I'm going to piggyback off that, 'cause I am going to talk about season tickets. I was pissed off because the only option they gave me after they fucked my seats, right? After they moved my seats and messed everything up, the only option they gave me were like, well, pay in full now and be the first to renew so that you have first opportunity to move. Like, what's up with that? Like,
where are you currently at in the moving process? Like, have they moved you at all? Or you're still trying to work on that?
I'm still trying to work on that. So, yeah, it is what it is. I'm just going to take my L and eventually figure it out. But, you know, it is what it is. But back to the thing is, the options were A, pay in full. You could still do the payment program It was just point of the story is they should have done a you pay X amount of percent to hold your season ticket for the following year,
or and which they ended up doing like
which
4 days
did anyway,
later,
or
4 days later after everyone's bitching.
Which, or I think it should be like a 50-pound deposit, like something. I don't want to say insignificant because 50 could be a lot of money to somebody, but something enough where it's like, okay, I have some quote unquote skin in here,
and just recognize that people are going through a really tough time right now, and just do the for once in your life, West Ham, Gold Sullivan and Brady, just do the right thing and say, hey, we understand times are tough. We're gonna help you out. We're gonna give you next season for £50, and pay as you go if you can pay more. But this will hold your ticket so you don't lose it. Like you can do so many little things. You can do so many little things to make people wow. I appreciate what they're doing. But nothing, not one thing that they ever do is where you look at that and say, wow, that's really nice of them. That's good. That's good on them. Good to do it. The only one thing I can ever think of that they've done is put one free coach up to like Man United or something. And that was after people were complaining about something. It's like nothing they do. And I know it gets brought up a lot, but the Leicester owner before he passed and his son, now that he's running the club, they do so many little things like, twice, three times a season. Like once a season, here's a free beer token for everyone in the stadium so you guys can go get a beer on us. Or here's a scarf on the seat. Or here's T-shirts. And like the T-shirts they've done before, before a couple games at the bowling ground. But like I'm talking nothing that they do just makes you think, wow, I really appreciate what they did for me. Nothing.
The only time that the club has ever... like that I was like, man, this club loves me. It's the fans. I think the fans and the fan experience, the supporter experience going up and down the country and all the amazing things I've done with my fellow supporters is what makes me love this club, you know. But I feel like maybe there's only one time West Ham has ever done something for me. And that was when, before I had season tickets, before it was my first ever game, before I even knew any of our friends over there. My first ever game at the old ground, I got to I called the stadium, like I called the box office, because they were not accepting tickets to be purchased online unless you had a previous booking history. Now, as an American who was, I think I was 21 at the time, my first ever trip to England, I would have never have had any booking history. So I called them up and was like, hey, you know, I'm from America. I want to see the ground before we move, blah, 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 blah. And the person on the phone in the ticket office, I wish I remembered their name. This is years ago anyway. But they were the kindest, most wonderful people I've ever talked to, and they really hooked me up. They were like, wow, you want to come all the way over here? That's amazing. We're excited to have you, blah, 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 blah. But, I mean, that's just great customer service. I've never ever...
For sure.
I've never felt Gold Sullivan and Brady have ever done anything for this club, but they saved us apparently. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. Anyway, I guess my views on the seats is it visually it looks better. I don't think it's going to look totally better until they square off the sides too. I mean, until you do that, the stadium's going to look like a Frankenstein arena where it's like, why is one end square and the other end's round? I don't understand that, but I do think visually it looks better. Hopefully it'll improve atmosphere. I don't know how it will do that. I really don't. The people are the same in there, whether they're 2 feet closer to the action or, you know, it's like it I don't think it's going to improve anything really.
It'll make improve the atmosphere, the team not fucking sucking. That would improve the atmosphere. You want to talk about
it's a start for sure.
I mean, I will say I've seen now a few games at the London Stadium where the atmosphere was absolutely incredible. 60,000 West Ham up in there just being loud, singing. It was incredible. I've seen the Bolin when it was dead. I've said this before. I was at Sunderland game the final season. Even in the final season, that Sunderland noon kickoff game was dead. Atmosphere was horrendous. But I will say a few days later, I was at the Spurs 1-0 win, the final game against Spurs at Upton Park, and that was incredible. So I think it's just playing well and who you're playing is what makes a great atmosphere. So that's one of my things, one of the criticisms of the London Stadium. There's plenty of criticisms, plenty. However, atmosphere, in my opinion, is not one of them. I think that's one of those things where the fans and the supporters need to make that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. The there's home
plenty
fans...
other criticisms. Sorry to interrupt you. I just want to make it clear. There's plenty of criticisms, but I think atmosphere is not one of them. I think that is on us, the fans, the supporters, to make that happen.
I totally agree. And our away fans, some of the best in the country, if not the best in the country. I mean, always constantly singing. I just wish our home supporters had the same passion as all of the away supporters did, or if the away supporters that go to all the home games, if they could pipe up, make a little more noise, that it would really help it out. And it just doesn't seem like it happens. Everyone's too spread out. If you had those same 3,000 people in the one corner of the stadium, maybe that would give the press the vibe out to everyone else. But obviously not everyone's going to want to move. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's hard to do, but it would be nice. I was really confused when I first went over there to games and at Upton Park. You're absolutely right. There are plenty of games where that atmosphere was dead. And I didn't understand why away from home you sung so loud and songs were going for 75, 80, 85 minutes of the game. And then when you get at home, you sing Bubbles when they come out, and maybe you sing Come On You Irons a couple times throughout the game, but there's no like songs like you sing on an away day at home. And I've still struggled to figure out why that is and why the fans aren't as vocal at home.
You and I have been to a bunch of away games as well. And, you know, for me, I don't want to be overly criticism of us at home games, because there's plenty of away games I've been to where the home atmosphere at those grounds are poor too. I think it just has to do with the way that it is over there. Because think about us, for example. You know, I love college American football, hand egg, throw ball, whatever you want to call it. I love college football, and home games are much, much louder. I think American culture is a very like loud, boisterous home ground. I think in England, from an outside point of view, I don't find the home team is loud. I always find the away team much louder at games in England. I think that's just the way the culture is. You know, the way that Upton Park used to be, you know, the players would say the fans would be on top of you, giving you some shit. And I completely agree with that from what I've seen. However, that's not unified singing. That's just hostile, scary environment. So I think there's a difference that I think we have high expectations for the London Stadium to be this boisterous loud, and I think it's gotten there a few games that I've been to and heard on the TV, but I don't think that we should be expecting it, because I just think that's the culture in England.
And if you're listening to this and you have any opinions on it, feel free. I mean, maybe you totally disagree with us. Shoot us your opinions at West Ham Way. Sorry, is it West Ham Way? Oh my God, I don't know how I'm.
It's been a while. Twitter,
at West Ham Way US Pod, right? Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, that is correct. Okay. Jesus,
I don't know
how
I managed, but seriously, get in touch with us if you disagree or if you agree with what we're saying on this topic of discussion, because obviously us as two Americans, we don't go to every single game, and maybe we're wrong on that. So chime in. Anyway, long circle back around to the Brentford game.
Jesus Christ.
It was a 2-1 win. West Ham at it again, undefeated in preseason. I'm sure that means absolutely nothing, and we'll go on to lose our first four games of the season. But it does seem like we always win in preseason, and it means absolutely nothing. But I thought overall, decent performance. Wasn't terrible. Flyers just scored, by the way.
Let's go. Come on. That's all. It's 1-0 Islanders. Okay, yeah, folks, but quick interruption. It is in the middle of the hockey playoffs, the COVID Cup, Stanley Cup playoffs, and the Flyers are the number one seed after a preseason, like a pre-cup situation,
round robin stage.
Yeah, round robin. And we've been absolutely terrible in the actual knockout rounds. But we are trying to hang in there and keep it alive. You're a St. Louis Blues fan. I'm a Flyers fan. And our buddy Andy is a Penguins fan. And just so everyone's aware, Brawley and Andy both have Stanley Cups in recent years, and the Flyers have not won one since 1975. So it would be really great if we'd win the Stanley Cup, just so I could tell you guys to shove it up your ass.
Okay, yeah, so back to the anyway, yeah, I got the game on in the background. I just saw them score. So, but yeah,
my buddy
Blues
just yelled in the other room. I hear him yelling.
The Blues made a first round exit in the COVID Cup. So sadly, we won't be going back to back. But anyway, yeah, back to the Brentford game. Once again, the wingbacks look totally exposed. I keep calling them wingbacks, outside backs, whatever you want to call them. I think they look lost out there. Ben Johnson actually looked good when he came on and played. I thought he was good, and I think he's going to be a saving grace for us this season. I think another excuse for the owners as to why they're not investing is they're going to put it on Ben Johnson. But that still leaves one of the sides exposed with Fredericks and or Cresswell and or Masuaku. And I think all three of those guys, I think I'm okay with Fredericks being a backup right back at this point, but
yeah,
him starting going forward scares the living crap out of me. And then you get Rico Henry that comes into that Brentford game and plays a blinder. It was a 7, 8, 9 out of 10. I thought he was terrific, and he showcased why he should be playing in the Premier League. And hopefully we can somehow get a bid in for him, but I doubt that's going to happen. But overall, scary that Antonio came on and got injured. That apparently it's not that serious, according to X. I've talked to him today, and I believe you put it out on Twitter too, that he said Antonio is a minor injury and it's nothing to be super concerned about. So that's good. I thought Jared Bowen again was brilliant. I thought he was really good.
Yarmolenko got on the score sheets.
And yeah, Yarmolenko scored with his right foot. But he seems to be the deflection king. I mean, like, I think 3/4 of all of the goals that he scored for West Ham have all come via the deflection, which, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from him, but he seems to get the lucky bounces, which I can appreciate. But, yeah, he scored with his right foot. Didn't know that could happen ever. That's good to see. But I think
– And you said Suchek scored. I think he does a really good job at finding himself in the right spaces, because I don't think really any of his goals that he scored for us were, like, damn, like bangers, but he seems to just get either tap-ins or puts himself in goal scoring positions. You can't ask much more from that from your
holding midfielder.
Yeah,
he's a holding midfielder, and he can go box to box, which we haven't. I think I said this a few podcasts ago, but maybe the last guy you could say that did that for us was Kouyaté, and before that, he's the best box to box midfielder that I've seen play for West Ham. And what a signing he is! If that was a David Moyes hand-picked target, I give all the credit in the world to him for that, because I'd never heard of the guy. I know he played really well against England for the Czech Republic, and I think maybe even scored against England. So he played in the Champions League for Slavia Prague. So all credit to David Moyes and whoever found Thomas Suchek. I think he is absolutely going to be a guy we want to lock down for a long, long time. But yeah, 2-1 win. Another preseason win. How much stock can you put in that? I don't know, but it's always good to see at the end of 90 minutes West Ham win. That's what I have to say about that.
I think the key for me, the key thing about preseason, and I was saying to my buddy Clay earlier because he watched the Chelsea game this weekend. For me, it's taking the positives away from preseason games. I'm not really worried about who looks bad. The reason I'm not too worried about who looks bad is because you can really gain form or just work a little harder in training. I think I like to look at who's already on form and who I expect to make a big splash and impact at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, no, it's all about fitness, and it's all about getting match minutes and to give guys like Josh Cullen time, to give guys like Jamal Baptiste in the Ipswich game or the Wickham game. I mean, giving those young kids some minutes that they can get some first-team action, I think that's huge. For guys like Jack Wilshere who haven't played a whole lot, they can get some minutes. That's great. And it's all about not getting injured. And the last thing you want to see is Mikel Antonio go down with a groin or hamstring injury, because we know he is extremely prone to those kinds of injuries. Just the physical, pacey style of games that he's played. So, I mean, the last thing you want to see on a preseason game is someone get hurt. And my heart sank when I saw Mikel Antonio go down after being on the pitch for about 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest things about the preseason so far and last season, I want to bring his name up one more time, is Diangana, because him playing for West Brom last year, I think, was massive, massive that whole season on loan, because he got to play a full season, a longer season, because it was the championship, against men. You know, when you're on the U23s and you're performing well there and scoring all those goals, that's great, but you're really playing against other boys under 23s. It's called that for a reason. When you're going up against grown-ass men who are trying to make a career and get themselves to the Premier League, it's like when you're playing in, the OHL versus the AHL, when you're playing against actual men and bigger guys who are trying to scrap and make a career for themselves. So I think that was a big development piece for Grady Diangana, and I'm excited to see what he can bring to West Ham this year, and I hope we keep him. I hope we don't loan him out again. I think he's going to be essential to the success of the team.
Yeah, and the fact that he got some experience on a promotion pushing and actually won promotion, I think that's huge too. I mean, I want players to be hungry to win. I don't think we have enough of those players, in my opinion. We have some prima donnas that are collecting a pay packet, and yep. I think they could give two shits if we win or lose. I mean, like, when you see some of these hideous defeats we've had over the last two or three seasons, and we've seen some absolutely horrendous ones, like the Burnley losses come to mind, the Cardiff game a couple of seasons ago away from home. Bournemouth a couple seasons ago. I mean, I could go on a list of about 25 games over the last 2 years that have been appalling performances.
A lot of our cup exits.
Yeah, and you see these guys leaving the field, and they don't even look upset. They look like they could care less. They just walk off like, oh well, at least I got $100,000 in my pocket for this week's work.
I'd be embarrassed.
Yeah, and they don't give a shit. A lot of them don't give a shit. That's why I want to see players come from the Championship and guys who I know are going to work hard because they want to become the best player that they can. They want to win and they hate losing. I want to see winners. I'm tired of seeing just passengers and prima donnas and guys that don't give a shit whether they win or lose. Felipe Anderson last season epitomized that for me. Manuel Lanzini, same thing. I was so frustrated watching them walk around the pitch at times and then coming off and look like they could give a shit less. Like, that annoys the living hell out of me. I just want winners, and I want triers. And as long as you try and you give all your effort, I would take 11 Robert Snodgrasses over 11 Felipe Andersons any day of the week.
So, keeping this podcast moving, because it's about to be the end of the second period, and we're going to finish intermission, then I'm going to get back to watching the third. Let's talk about someone who does care a lot and puts 100% on every time. Declan Rice. What do you where are your thoughts on this? You know, I think everyone's freaking out right now, and I'm getting sick of doing this every off season. We did it with Payet, we did it with Declan last year. We're doing it with Declan this year. It's going to be a meltdown every year, and that's what happens when you have talented players. You know, we're not. What did I just get done bitching about earlier in this podcast? That we never turn a profit on any of our players because they all suck when we want to move them on. You know, it's like when you see some of these people's evaluations of players, like, okay, we're going to sell XYZ. It's like, no, we want to sell them for a reason. So my point is Declan Rice and Dimitri Payet, we were upset to see them go or almost go, or are they going to go? Because they're talented players. This is what it's like, West Ham fans, to have talented players. So what are your thoughts on Declan Rice, where we stand? Are you freaking out? Are you calm? Do you have a plan? Where are you at with this mentally?
I'm not freaking out yet. It sounds like, and the kind of person Declan seems to be, is he won't be the guy that goes on strike or makes a big deal or makes a big fuss and puts in a transfer request. Until that day comes, I am happy and I'm content and I'm not worried. But the second he tries to force a move, and that'll scare the living crap out of me. And I have no doubt that he wants to go, and ideally he'd be playing for Chelsea. But if Chelsea don't come in, if we hold firm at 80 million, then I'm okay with that. But we cannot wait until the end of the window, and then that's when we decide to sell him and we can't bring anyone in, because we have to spend that money in that window. Declan Rice is a huge hole out of this team. If we leave the summer window and Declan Rice goes and Mark Noble has to come in and play every single game again, then we're in deep, deep crap again. And I'm scared to figure out. And don't get me wrong, I still think Mark Noble has a lot to give for us. I'm not relying on him, but I think he's still got more gas in the tank to give for us. But Declan Rice is such a huge part of our team that if he goes and we don't get anyone in, I am horrified as to what could happen.
Here's my thoughts on Declan Rice. First of all, can you blame the guy if he did want to go?
No, not at all.
No, you can't. You can't blame someone to have bigger aspirations and want more in their career.
And play for your boyhood team.
Right. Or any team. Let's say he went to City or Man United or whatever. Yeah. I can't blame a guy for wanting to do better. The only way to keep Declan Rice here for the rest of his career, you ready for this? The only way to keep Declan Rice here the rest of his career is if we properly invested in the side and consistently pushed for that top seven spot, that sixth spot, like became a Leicester or an Everton up in that range, the Wolves. And press for Europe. I think he would stay. I think if we properly paid him and we were pressing for Europe every season, he would stay. But instead, these ass clowns who run the club put zero into the side, and he's a dead man duck. Every the last three seasons now, he's been a rock. We've relied on an 18, 19, 20-year-old to be the rock and the solid, the soul of a team. And same way that Mark Noble said that we can't rely on him at his age, we shouldn't be relying on Declan Rice at his age.
Yeah, for sure.
So one, I don't blame him. Two, I think he would stay if we properly invested in the side and press Europe. However, we're not doing that either. So if he goes, it is on the board, and they are going to have a problem if they don't already.
And another thing that cracks me up is, like, fans seem to get this huge deal about who's the captain, and I don't think the players could give a shit who the captain is. I think they play a role,
I don't agree with that. Here's
what I'm saying. I don't think giving him the armband, say, here, you're going to be the captain for 10 years, that's what's going to keep him to stay. Like, that's what people are saying. Like if we give him the armband, that's going to make him stay and want to stay, give him another reason to stay. It's like, I don't think that has any bearing at all to him to staying at West Ham. And that's what people are saying. They're like, oh, I'd give him the armband right now. It's like,
And I think he'd be honored, and I think he would take it seriously, and he'd be happy to. But that's not why he would stay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
If you didn't give him a better contract and didn't invest in the sky, but, oh, he's the captain, no, I agree with you. He would not stay. Him being the captain is not going to be the deciding factor. However, I will say I think that a player like him, I think he would be honored and do the captainship justice.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't be the reason he stayed. Like I agree with what you're saying. When people are like, well, you know, if we give him the captain, that might buy us three more years. What?
Yeah.
No, that's bullshit.
It's going to have no effect. I listened to that Peter Crouch podcast, and he talks about how the captaincy is blown out of proportion by the fans. And really, the captain has very limited kind of annoying duties outside of the 90 minutes you play on the pitch. And then, like, they're in charge of sorting the family tickets and the tickets for the whole club. And they have to, like, and they say that the fans blow it way out of proportion. Like, it really doesn't affect the players all that much. Like, there are good captains and who do a really good job at leading. But a lot of the times, I mean, it makes no difference to them who the captain is. And that's what I'm saying, like, to Declan Rice. Like, yeah, I would take the armband and I would lead us. But, like, is it going to be a factor in him staying? No, I don't think it's going to have any bearing on whether he stays and goes. I think he could be a Chelsea captain in 2 years if he wants to be.
Yep.
Who even is Chelsea's captain right now? Could you tell me?
Hold on 1 second. Clay, who's Chelsea's captain? All right, so it's Azpilicueta, yeah.
Yeah, okay. But that tells you, like, I couldn't even tell you who Chelsea's captain is. Like, I think Declan Rice could be a future, and he could look at it and say, well, I could be a future captain of Chelsea, or do I want to be captain at West Ham?
Yeah, it's going
to
be Chelsea. Yeah, midfielder in one of the best sides in England, English. Yeah, he could easily be the next captain of Chelsea, too.
The next Lampard. In 3 years. Be the next legend, you know what I mean? It's the same thing. it's and again, I'm not trying to like bash anyone who says that. Like, I know you're looking at the bright side, and this is what I would do if I was the owners. But
If I was the owners, I'd invest in the fucking side. That's what I would do.
Yeah, and I would give him whatever money he wants. Like, if he wants 150K a week, I give it to him. I would say if it's me, my plan for Declan Rice would be, this is my 5 to 10 year plan for you. My holding midfielder for the next 15 years or whatever, X amount of years. You are my holding midfielders. Who would you like to see us bring in? And maybe they've already done this. I don't know. But I would sit down with them. I would say, what kind of players do you like to play with? What kind of styles? Are there specific traits in players? I mean, who do you like playing around? And I would build a spine that not solely based off of him, but I would get an idea of what he likes. And I would try to bring in players that Declan Rice thinks can do a job. And then this is the best way to get the most out of my game and take us forward and push for Europe. Let's build that spine. So let's get you a goalkeeper, two center backs, another midfielder alongside you, maybe that Suchek, a couple of wingers and a forward. And let's see how you think this should go. And I'm giving you the keys to the car. I'm letting you drive us. This is your team, and I'm letting you drive us. That's what I would do. And then, oh yeah, by the way, I want 200 grand a week. Okay, here you go. There it is. But that's what I would do. I would make him feel wanted and feel like he is the guy that we are going to rally around for the next 10 to 15 years. That's what I would do. But if he leaves this offseason to go to Chelsea, I can't blame the guy. As long as he does it in a non-Arnie, non-Payet way and just does it respectfully, like say, hey, I really want to go play for Chelsea. I understand that you guys have to get a certain fee for that. But if my valuation is met, can I go? And I would say, yes, absolutely. I don't have a problem with that. And I think he would still be considered a West Ham Academy legend. Yeah. I wouldn't say like a full legend, but a guy that comes out of the academy. It could be another Rio, could be another Frank.
Yeah, someone who's been a serious player for the team and that came out of the academy. I just hope that it doesn't turn sour. And I hope that the board and Rice never turn it that way. Either or, both could do it. Rice could be like, yeah, I want to go. And then the board's like, you're never leaving. And they'd be like, okay. Or Rice could just one day up and be like, yeah, I'm ready to go. Deuces. So, you know, I just hope it never turns sour and it leaves on a positive note. Anything else you want to talk about with Declan Rice before we get into some Twitter?
No, I think the only thing that I wanted to talk about real briefly that has to do with my life is – as some of you, or maybe you guys didn't notice because MLS is so weird, but St. Louis now has a MLS team name that has come out, and that is St. Louis City SC. I'm not crazy about the name. I shouldn't say that. I'm okay with the team name. It's a traditional football team name, City. I like that. Compared to here right now, when people say they're going to see St. Louis FC play, they say, oh, I'm going to the FC game. Like, that's so cringy and weird to me. Sounds terrible. And I'm glad now that people say, oh, I'm going to the City game. Like, okay, yeah, we're going to go see City. That's awesome. I like that a lot. Whereas like if I was telling people I was going to watch, I'm going to the STL FC game tonight. You know, it's good that we now have an identity. City is the rallying cry. The other thing I'll say is that now that the MLS team has been announced, the St. Louis FC have announced their folding at the end of the season. So that's my local team that I have season tickets to and I have for all 6 years of its existence or 5 years, whatever it is now. So that sucks. I'm losing my team, which it's like a total foreign concept to people listening to this in England.
Who's lost your team twice now.
Yeah, I've lost the Rams, and now I'll be losing St. Louis FC. And at least the Rams still exist. St. Louis FC is just folding into nothingness, which sucks. So that means for the entire 2021 and 2022 calendar years, we will have no high-end professional soccer in the city of St. Louis. We still have a couple of lower league teams. Like St. Louis Maritza and St. Louis Lions.
That's gotta be tough, though. I feel like that's going to hinder a lot of momentum.
Oh, for sure.
That people might be like, okay, I'm going to transition, or the MLS team couldn't work with the USL team. I think that's going to be tough. That would kill a lot of momentum and pride in soccer in your city.
Yeah, for sure. You could have really we're giving you something for 2 years, and now at least you could curb the appetite for soccer for 2 years. But anyway, the badge, I think, for St. Louis City is horrendous. I think it's a absolute stinker of a logo. I think it's horrendous. My issues with it, the arch is not in the correct shape of the arch. It's like the arch if you twisted it in. I love the fact that the arch is on there. Some people hate that. I love it. It gives you instant identity. Like you could take the word St. Louis off of that badge, and when you see that arch, you know that that's St. Louis's soccer team. So I love that. But the rivers,
like the color scheme.
Yeah, it's like what sucks about the colors is they're calling it like city red, but it's like pink. It's not red. It's pink. Like, just own the pink. It's like it's a watermelon, like a
salmon watermelon.
Yeah, it's darker than salmon. It's a dark pink. Own the pink. Make it our own. I know Miami has pink in their color scheme, but just make pink our thing. And it's like, okay, we're a pink team. I'm okay with that. I like that. It's different. It's not the same color scheme that anyone else has. So we're like this watermelon pink, navy, and yellow. So I don't hate that color scheme. But the badge, the rivers that run along the badge, they don't look like rivers. It looks like a road junction to me, and that's what they're calling them, rivers. And why the hell do you turn the word sideways on the badge? I don't understand that. I know you're trying to be unique, but I think it's terrible. You could move that to the top, open up the arch so you get the full arch on there and get some rivers on there. And that's what I would do differently. And I know
people should have consulted you. They should have consulted you, bro.
For sure. I would have gladly. What's crazy is, like, these marketing companies get paid millions of dollars to come up with these logos, and they always, you constantly suck. They're terrible.
Except for the Seattle Kraken, I fuck with that. I think they're
that's a good logo for sure. And I know people, you're not tuning in to listen to St. Louis soccer talk.
Or
I understand
the Seattle or Seattle NHL talk. So,
but yeah, I'll wrap it up. But anyway, I'm really sad to be losing St. Louis FC. What sucks now is we had a reduced capacity of 25%, so I was able to go to the last two games. But now the St. Louis County COVID numbers are going back up, so they've cut fans off, so zero fans at games. And I could potentially see the club that I've been going to for the last 6 years just play without fans and then die and go off into the abyss and not
kinda
get a chance,
like,
to say goodbye.
Kind of, yeah, a lot like Brentford. In their stadium.
Yeah, I mean, at least they still have a team, but yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a lot like that, not being able to say goodbye to that stadium and not being able to say goodbye to the team. Hopefully towards the end of this season. Well, we're running out of time, though. I think there's only two games left in the regular season, but that's it. But anyway, let's move on. We'll get on to the Twitter questions, and if you got them pulled up, you can go ahead and read us off. This is our first question.
Yeah, if you want to pull it up, too, I'll start while you do that. The first one is from A.G. Harris the Fourth. And that on Twitter is The Real Harris the Fourth. And it says, as an American who plans to go to England in a few years, hopefully after COVID, how's the best way to get tickets to a match? And what's the experience like compared to an American sporting event? Also, how hard is it to get tickets to other clubs, i.e. the championship sides and lower? So I guess I'll start with this, if that's all
right. Yeah, this is more your forte than it is mine. I will say, I think we have covered this like multiple times, but for people who haven't heard us talk about this before, I think it's really, you should really listen to this portion of the podcast if you are interested in going and getting tickets, because it's nothing like America going to get tickets. So go ahead and give us your answer.
Okay, so the first part of the question is, what's the best way to get tickets to the match? The best way to get tickets to the match is definitely, if you want official tickets and no drama, I would call the club. That's what I did for seeing the games at the Bolin, and I would call the club, and they will hopefully sort you out. Obviously, you're going to have to pay international for the box office and all that, but I would call the club so that there's no drama. The second way to get tickets, the only problem with that, I will say, the issue you may have there, if it's a big game, getting two tickets together. So that'll be your first issue that you'll have to navigate. So my best recommendation for any American fan that's going over is suck it up and don't go to a derby match. And I would go to see West Ham play Brighton or Burnley or something just so that you could go. And you can get two tickets together, and most likely they'll be in the upper bowl. The second way to get tickets is to know somebody. So the American Hammers group has a Facebook page. There's people like us, Green Street Hammers, and all their website. You can reach out to X and Dave's Twitter page, West Ham Way UK, more than just a pod. You can reach out to all these platforms, Hammers Chat, West Ham Fan TV, and somebody might know somebody who might have extra tickets. Now, the dangerous way with doing that is then you have to meet up with the people. You got to trust that they're not going to do you dirty. You're going to make sure you trust the person you're buying from. Yes.
Do your research. Vet them out if you can. But we've seen it time and time again where people have gotten scammed.
Yeah. So if you're going to do that, make sure you completely trust the source. You have their phone number. You have their email. Because that's not really the best way to do it. Because you could get scammed and the club and or the Premier League or whoever's just going to be like, well, too bad, so sad. That's not the official way of buying tickets. So that's the other route. The final route is just Twitter in general, which I would not recommend. I think it's a very bad idea. I've done it one time and it worked out for me. However, I've seen people all the time get scammed. One thing to look out for is the Premier League does not do paper tickets, like print out paper tickets. Like they'll make tickets there, but you cannot say, hey, print this PDF, you know. So you got to be very careful with that if it doesn't look right. You know, sometimes I think West Ham actually does do that. I think some clubs do, but if the ticket doesn't look right, then don't do it. I think you just got to be very careful. It's not like America where you can just go on StubHub. There's no third party website. So that's the last recommendation.
For sure.
Do not buy from StubHub. Do not buy from Vivid Tickets. Do not buy from any other third party other than somebody you may not know, because the Premier League prohibits completely buying from third parties. So I would
scalping
tickets, you know, or don't buy at the stadium. For example, like you can go to a Phillies game and non-COVID and just go walk up to the stadium and someone's like, tickets, who needs tickets? And you can just buy from some random stranger and they'll give you two tickets. You know, you can do that in America. Don't do that there. Do you want to comment on the experience? I think you should definitely mention the segregation.
Yeah, the only things that I would say is, one, is the claret membership still a thing? Because I think that is I think they're still doing that.
Yeah, and
officially, that is the according to the club, officially, that is the only way to get tickets is if you buy a claret membership, and then you have access to the West Ham resell where the fans put their own tickets up for sale, and then you can buy them that way. I'm just saying, I'm just throwing that out there. That is an option that you can do.
Best way that to just call them. But yes, I agree with you.
That is an option you can do. Anyway, you're scalping over there, as Tony just said, is totally frowned upon. Like America, that is like, that's what people live and die with, is scalping and selling tickets for more than you paid them for. Over there, it's like totally, totally, totally frowned upon. You can't do it, and you'll be like, there's like people riot against you if you do that. It's such a bad thing. So that's the only thing I would say. The third, away games, away tickets are a lot harder to get to tickets to than home games, I would say. I don't know if you agree with that. Most of them 100%. Are harder to get to.
Well, yeah. So just so y'all understand, for a lot of away games, I would say majority of them, whenever you get full capacity, majority of the time, there's only 3,000 away tickets. And it's not like America where everyone can buy wherever. You have to sit with your own supporters. Or, you know, I've listened to a few other podcasts where people have sat in the home end, but you obviously don't wear West Ham and you don't cheer. So, like, that does not sound fun to me. But you could
For sure.
do it if you really were in a pinch and wanted to go to an away game. I would just recommend, like, it's hard to, whenever we score, like, I would find it extremely hard not to be like, some shit like that. So recommend that.
That was going to be my suggestion, is if you do get tickets to an away game with with West Ham fans anyway. The typical rule of thumb is don't wear colors. I see that being broken more and more and more as the years go on.
Anymore, but
yeah, but it's you're safer off if you don't wear West Ham colors when you're going to an away game. That's what I will say. Now, there's certain away games you know are going to be friendly and you're not going to have much of an issue. If you go to like Brighton or you go to Bournemouth or you go to Burnley, you can blend in at Burnley and Aston Villa. But when you go to Spurs away or Chelsea away or games like that where might be a little more hostile, probably best not to wear West Ham colors. Now, as Tony said, if you do get tickets in the home end of the away stadium,
don't kick you out.
Yeah, most stadiums, I think all stadiums technically prohibit you from wearing the other team's colors in the home end. At West Ham, apparently it's super easy to get in with away team colors or anything. But a lot of you put yourself in danger if you wear a West Ham shirt inside an opposing team's home stadium. You become a target and you very well could get hurt. Obviously, I don't condone that. I don't think that's a good thing, but you're putting yourself at risk if you do that.
It's just not even really fun, even if you don't even get hurt. That's just then people shouting at you for the whole time. Like, that doesn't even sound enjoyable to me.
And you can't celebrate because, like Tony said, if you celebrate, then you really do become a target and then you're probably getting kicked out. So that's the only thing I'll add to that. I think Tony summed that up pretty good. But basically, if you need tickets, the best thing you can do is find a connection and know someone. That's what I did. I got lucky with meeting someone and who became my go-to guy for tickets. So that's what I would say your easiest bet is.
The other part of the question I wanted to address was the tickets for other games. It depends on the game, but it can be super easy in the lower leagues. For example, last time I was over in January, I did my buddy and I decided to just go on this crazy adventure. We went to 3 games in one day. So we went all the way up to the first one was Rochdale against Newcastle in the FA Cup. And then we drove to Salford in the, I think that was League One or League Two. And then finally drove back up to Fleetwood Town for the third game at all 3 different times. So it was something fun and crazy to do.
That's awesome.
Fairly easily got tickets for all of those games except for the Rochdale one.
Go experience a lower league game, guys.
Man,
I will say,
absolutely.
Don't feel like you have to go to a Premier League game if you're going over there. Like,
go to the West Ham game, but then
yeah, for sure. But like, don't feel like I got a Saturday free while I'm over there, so I got to go see Chelsea play. I don't know.
Go see Burton. Orient. You've seen Leighton Orient play, right? Yeah. At their stadium.
Yeah, it's like down to the lower leagues, man. It's so much fun, and like Tony said, a lot easier to get tickets. Don't get hung up on you have to see Premier League games while you're over there. I understand if that's your thing, but what I'm saying is just be a little more open-minded. If you get a Sunday free and you see that Salford City is taking on Leighton Orient, go to the Salford game. I mean, the atmosphere is always good. Tickets are cheap, food's cheap, and the atmosphere is always awesome. And the cool thing when you went and saw Salford City, like I believe that's the team owned by like Gary Neville,
by like that Man United side.
I think that's awesome that they have a lower league team that they own. And so anyway, the stories are cool in the lower league. Go see a lower league game. I highly, highly recommend it.
Also, chat with people when you buy random tickets. So I went to see Orient play my first ever trip that I was in England before I met my friend group. So I was just talking to random strangers when I was at the game. I sat down, bought one ticket by myself and a whole group of people. I was perplexed why. I knew it was a smaller ground, but they don't even have a scoreboard or a screen or even the clock, the time at Leighton Orient Stadium.
Right.
So I asked someone, I was like, hey, Where's the scoreboard? And a few of the people were just laughing. They're like, oh, you're not from around here, are you? And it was just fun, friendly banter, you know, and I got to learn a lot about Leighton Orient and lower division sides, saying like, look, our clubs don't have that money and all those things that you may know in your head, but you don't get to actually experience until you're there. And it was crazy cool. It was one of the coolest things I've done. I went to a lot of lower league sides and games when West Ham has played them too. Like I went to Gillingham, Cheltenham. Let's see, where else did I go? Yeah. So I just think it's a really fun time. Highly recommend.
Cool. Next question I have here is from Tony at Tony Hatcher. He said, are you guys doing a fantasy Premier League team? Would you consider one with one of your followers? What I'm going to say on this is we do not do, for the record, a quote unquote paid league because you're not allowed to do that. However, I run a league where you can play in a competitive league for a prize at the end. That's all I'll say. But officially there's no quote unquote buy-in, but if you're interested in getting into a fantasy Premier League with other listeners where you might be able to win a prize, just DM me, on Twitter and I can give you the lowdown on that because, like I said, officially fantasy Premier League does not allow you to do paid leagues. So that's all I'll say on that. The next question we have here is from Jeremiah Carson at @jcarson_1755. And we kind of already talked about this, but let's just answer it. He says, I'll ask the question that nobody wants to even think about. If Rice goes, where would you want to see the money used? On the pitch, off it, where? So go ahead and answer this
one. Well, it's not going to get used anywhere. But if it was, I'd actually like to see off the pitch. Funny enough, I think I'd like to see a little bit on to cover his the hole that Rice would leave in the side. However, I would love to see that training ground completely rebuilt somewhere else or on that plot of land. It's embarrassing. Some of the training grounds we see around the country, even from the other London clubs, and ours is just looks like a trailer park. So that's where I would like to see a lot of funds go. However, if they're planning on selling the team or stripping them of all the assets, then why would they invest in that when they're really just getting the job done, barely scrapping survival? So that's where I land on the Rice money. Where do you want to see it go?
Yeah, I mean, I'm nowhere near as big on the training ground as a lot of people are. I've talked to X about it before. Luckily he's an asset that I've gotten to just text and ask about all this stuff. So, and he says, I mean, he may have even said this on a show too, that people blow it out of proportion because visually it's not like from the outside, it's not very good, but they do say the facilities on the inside are up to Premier League standard. I don't know what that means, but people at the club say it's blown out of proportion, not from the owner's side, for like players and some staff that work there. They say it's blown out of proportion. So I'm really not that worried about the training ground. If it makes a difference in an elite player signing for us and not signing is the training ground, then we'll say, okay, if players are turning us down because we don't have a good training ground, then I would agree with you that I would say let's spend a good amount of money to revamp that. I don't think that's the case. Maybe it is. I could be wrong on that. So who knows?
For me, then I agree with you. I'm going to interrupt you real quick. I do. Then if that's the case, that's fine. It's just an aesthetic thing that I think would add to bolster the club, whether it's true or not.
And not make us a laughing stock.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Okay. Sorry. Go ahead. Where would you like to actually see it go then?
2-1 Islanders. I'm sorry. I know I'm making you miss the game right now.
And my team needs me. So we're only going to answer a few more here. So
yeah. There's only a couple left. The next one is from Patrick Harper @Patrick_Harper. Tough start to the season. Should we hit the panic button if we're bottom with only 3 points at the end of October? I'll start this one off.
Yeah.
No, I don't think October is the time to be panicking. I think we will be extremely pissed off and probably ready to riot if we're bottom at the end of October. But I am a huge believer, and this year's a little different because Christmas is normally the period where I reevaluate where we should be at. Like I always say, don't look at the league table until Christmas because it means nothing. And I'm a firm believer in that. And maybe January is if we're bottom at the end of January, that's when I'll start to panic. And I'm not sure how the fixtures work, but basically it's halfway.
Essentially mid-January is the new Christmas. So you're pretty much saying you're not going to panic until we're bottom after 19 games.
Correct. Yeah. That's when I'll hit the panic button.
See, the reason I'm not going to panic, I agree with you, unfortunately, which makes bad podcasting. I'm not going to panic because if you look at our fixture list, I mean, we literally play one team outside of the top half of the
table. We got a tough start to the season.
Until November 7th, we play Fulham. But then even after Fulham, we have Sheffield. So we pretty much play the entire top half of the table to start the season. So I expect us to be in the relegation zone after October. I will say, though, I think this could be very beneficial if we do pick up some results.
Sure.
And we're maybe sitting 15th and we're doing like okay, which then would, and we get through there fairly unscathed with a few draws, a bunch of losses, and maybe two or three wins out of nowhere, sitting on maybe like 10 or 11 points. Well, then, damn. We could make a run playing some of the quote-unquote easier sides, because look at West Ham. You know, we always turn up for big sides, and then we just shit bricks against poor sides, except for the cup games. But it seems like we've gotten some big wins and some really poor results.
Agreed.
Go ahead.
Next one's from Booner at NEILK, so Neil K64. He has preferred formation. As Dave Walker said this week, we need to get the best out of Allaire, and that is a part of a two. So 3-5-2 solves that and the fullback quote unquote problem. So what do you think our best formation would be going into the season?
I don't think we have enough strong center backs to consistently run three of them. In my opinion, I don't see, like, you know, Diop and Ogbonna has been strong. But if you throw Balbuena in there and you're running three center backs every single week, who would our fourth choice center back be?
That's a good question. That's a great question, I couldn't tell you. Probably Cardoso, maybe.
Right. So that's the problem.
I guess Baptiste probably, now that he looked really good against Wickham. I don't know if you can put any stock in that, but maybe Baptiste.
But that essentially answers our question. The backup, the fourth choice center back would either be Declan Rice, Baptiste, or Cardozo. So if one of those get injured, then you got to switch your formation, as well as just running the same three center backs all season. They're going to get tired. So I don't think that the 3-5-2 is the answer. I do agree it solves the fullback situation. What really solves the fullback situation is investing in some fucking fullbacks. But
what I don't like about 3-5-2, sorry to interrupt you,
go.
Is you leave your midfield wide open in a 3-5-2. My local team, St. Louis FC, played a 3-5-2 for like three games this season, and through the middle of the pitch, you are just being totally threaded left, right, and center, and you're putting a lot of pressure on Declan Rice and Thomas Suchek at that point. And on top of that, we have like four or five wingers and number 10s, like, and then none of them get on the pitch in that formation either. So I don't know if that works for us. I think to get the best players on the pitch, I think 4-4-2-3-1 is the most likely. I would love to see a partnership of Haller and Antonio, if that's possible. But in a 4-2-3-1, I'm tempted to play Mikel Antonio in the 10 role and give him a little more freedom to push forward. Bowen and Fornals out on the wing. I know Fornals isn't great on the wing, and maybe Yarmolenko instead of Fornals. I don't know. And then you got your two holding midfielders of Rice and Suchek, and then the back four of mismatches. But I mean, that's where I would go. I'm sorry. I interrupted you in the middle of your
answer. No. I just don't think 3-5-2 is the answer. And you pretty much summed up what I was going to say, is because I definitely want to see Allaire pair with somebody. I think the biggest problem we have with Allaire, someone said on Twitter, and I think you even said at the beginning of the podcast that, he needs to prove that he's the striker we want him to be. I think he needs to be put in a position to prove that he's the striker that we want him to be. I don't think that he played by himself at Frankfurt, if I'm correct.
Played with Jovic mostly.
And how many times do we see West Ham sign marquee strikers that we think that is going to change our lives as a club, that play with somebody, and then we play the same formation where they're isolated? So, like, look at Chicharito. Chicharito is a hell of a talent, but we just isolate him up there, and that's not his style. So same with Allaire. You know, I think he needs someone to play off of. He was one of the top assist people in the Bundesliga, I believe, playing with Jovic or something like that. So I want to read one last question, and then let's get it rolling here. The last question is from David Oliver, who is private, so I don't think y'all can look him up. I met him
in Vegas at the Vegas event. Really good, really, really, really good guy. So shout out to David.
Oh, okay, cool. Would you like to see West Ham have a sister club in League One or Two, where we could send three or four players every season and guarantee them playing time? Do you want to answer that?
Yeah. Ideally, in a perfect world, Yeah, absolutely. I would love to have us have a League One or Two team that we send all of our guys to. A lot like Man City and New York City FC seem to have built this relationship. I think that's awesome. Or an MLS, just somewhere where you can send your players and guarantee them playing time. But we know our owners don't have the pockets to own another team. And I don't trust them to do the right thing anyway. But yeah, if we had like Arab billionaire owners and we could own another team and send them all to a place to develop,
Get that oil money.
I think that's an awesome idea. But under Gold, Sullivan, and Brady, that will never, ever, ever happen.
Listen, they can barely manage one team. Can you see them fucking up a second? I'd like to say on the sister club thing, I would like to see it happen, just not in the Premier League. I mean, not in England. I would like to see some of our players go foreign as well. Some of the players that we sign that are foreign, I'd like to see them sign and go back out on loan and keep developing in those countries. I think a lot of times we buy foreign players and then they just struggle in the U23s because it's a whole and struggle to develop because it's a whole different style of play that they're not used to and they're too young to adjust. So I would like to see that happen, but you know, that's an ideal world. I don't trust the board to do what really needs done. So I think that's everything. I'm going to get back to this hockey game. Brawley, will you take us out?
Yeah. So if you want to follow us on Twitter at West Ham Way US Pod, you can also send us an email if you like. If you want to have any constructive criticism or positives, anything you want to talk to us about on email, you can send it to the West Ham Way USA Podcast at gmail.com. I on Twitter, if you don't already follow me, you can follow me at Brawley Darbin. You can follow Tony at Tony Clark Dupe. And if you guys could please go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating and write us a nice review. We really would appreciate that. It helps us reach more listeners, and that's all we want to do at the end of the day. And guys, I will say I'm working on guests. Hopefully I could get a couple of them lined up in the next couple of weeks, and we could have some new voices on here for you so it's not just listening to us to ramble on. We're going to let you go and let Tony get back to watching his Flyers. And until next week, we'll see you guys later. See ya.
All right.